Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show, co-host Joe, with you all in this morning. Afternoon. It's afternoon now. Always a blast to be here with you all. It just turned afternoon, okay? I haven't woken up yet. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show is a Main Street Radio Network production. Been with the company the entirety of its existence. 12 and a half years. So if you want to thank anyone, actually, yeah, it's probably exactly, well, no, the 12 and a half anniversary passed it. Wow, that grammar was terrible. There is no such thing as a 12th and a half anniversary, and of course, past it is not a real word. I can word today, can't I? So the 12th and a half landmark in its existence was actually earlier this week, because in 6 months, it will be the 13th anniversary of the Silk or Joe Show being founded. Of course, back then it was called Jane, as in Jane Silk, the silk in the titular silk, in Silk or Joe Show, which is a Main Street Radio Network production. So if you want to thank anyone for this program and my terrible grammar, go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Find out more about the Silk or Joe Show. Find out about the Al Nathan Show, which I hosted with this week with much better grammar and wording and word choice. All there at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com, podcast for the programs, and an app for Android users. And we also have AlanNathan.com if you want to check out the late Al Nathan and information on him and his columns and op-eds and items like that. And we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing our show, which can be found on social media, Facebook at Main Street Radio Network and X at Main Street Radio. We had a page on Getter, GETTR.com, but I haven't tended to it this year. It's just been no point. No one engaged, so there was no point to it. I had like 1,800 followers, but not one engagement or like. I think a lot of bots got onto that site for whatever reason. Anyway, I digress. So, stuff that I'm going to talk about right now is Ma'am Donnie, the mayor of New York City. I spent, a lot of time focusing on Virginia because of the junk going on there. But we have this New York City mayor, Ma'am Donnie, earlier this week. He came out bragging that he'd eliminated the $12 billion budget deficit in New York City. So, first of all, this budget deficit started out as $6 billion when he took office. Then he comes in and claims it's $12 billion. Then he comes in out and says, actually, there's nothing there. There's no deficit now. This new budget it took us forever to come up with, we finally figured out how to spend money wisely. But how exactly did he do this? He's insisting in his statement that pretty much they're continuing with the socialist policies that he wants. Well, you don't make money spending money without getting something in return, and the government does not get anything in return when it spends money. Even if it had even if the government did a universal basic income funded by taxpayers, I mean, you can't have every taxpayer on the universal basic income and no outside source for your income. It just doesn't work that way. And it's kind of weird, because I was thinking about it last night, money kind of operates under the laws of thermodynamics and stuff like that, where the one that goes, matter can neither be destroyed nor created. Well, money can be created, but it can't exactly be destroyed. And certainly in a government sense, you can't create more, well, I guess with a money printer you can't create more value for your currency than what already exists just by printing money and paying off everybody. You have to untether yourself from any economic institution in the world, create your own little bubble, like North Korea or something, or like the Soviet Union did, and then only then could you actually control the value of your currency without any market claims outside of it. And that, in that environment, perhaps you can get a universal basic income going, but not really in the current world market, unless we manage to worldwide somehow get the whole world to adhere to our demands on money as in universal basic incomes and everything like that, and also get people to stop creating things that are valuable that people would actually want. But I don't see any of that happening. So we're not going to get a universal basic income, that's functional, which means if we do get one, it's basically the government stealing money from producers and giving it to consumers. And of course, if the government is taking money from one source and redistributing it to another, it's not going to be able to collect as much from that in the form of taxes, since now you have a bunch of people who aren't paying taxes, and you're incentivizing more people to not pay taxes. You know, all these people on welfare and programs, and so, you know, all these socialists out there, they're like, oh yeah, well, it's going to work, it's going to work. See, I know people on welfare, or I'm on welfare, and it's not collapsing the system. I don't have to get a job to keep the system afloat. Yeah, but someone else has to get a job to keep the system afloat. That's the problem. Someone else has to be a producer, in order, because the government is a consumer. The government takes in taxpayer money from you. Okay? It doesn't pay for itself somehow. The government doesn't have businesses or industries or anything like that that draw money into itself. It steals money from you at gunpoint, courtesy of the IRS with its 2 million bullets. Could be more right now. I'm just using figures from like 2015 when they had 2 million bullets and every agent was issued a gun or something like that. But anyway, so that's how it works, though. The government does not just create money out of the ether, except by printing, but that doesn't create value for that money. It's like there's a set amount of value that can possibly be attributed to the U.S. economy, and printing money only creates inflation. It doesn't actually change the value. It just devalues the money. So printing money is not how you create money. That's what modern monetary theory seems to think. But no, that's not how it works, unless, again, you untether yourself from any external measure for your economy. So the government, since it can't print money, it can't create money, then it can only take money. And if it only takes money, then how does it create taxes if everyone is being paid by the government? It doesn't make sense, does it? How can you create wealth when all you're doing is redistributing wealth? And you do not function in a way that creates wealth. You function in a way that takes wealth from someone else. How do you create wealth in that situation? You don't. You just steal. And that's why they say socialism only works until you run out of other people's money, because you are relying on that. Or, again, like North Korea, where you just kind of wall yourself in and totally remove yourself from the rest of the world. In that case, yes, or like the Soviet Union again, where you have to where you can create your own little currency program and totally make yourself unable to trade with the rest of the world. That's why, you know, you heard this rumor going around that Pepsi at one point had the world's like third largest navy or whatever, because the Soviets had to pay them off in naval ships because the Soviet ruble didn't translate properly. That there is some accuracy to that. It was proposed. I don't think it actually happened. And it also, if it hadn't gone through, it would not have made Pepsi a navy. But the reason that they was even proposed in the first place is because the Soviets could not pay Pepsi with their own currency. They had to figure out some way to trade. And they've been doing it with vodka, actually, for a while. Pepsi would, you know, bring over X amount of sodas in exchange. Russia would give them X amount of vodka. So it was more of a bartering system, because the Soviet currency was exactly as liberals think that the American currency, I guess, works right now. Like, not as it should be, but as it is. Because you look at their proposals for universal basic income and their idea that everything from the government is free money, then, yeah, they seem to think that we do already have a Soviet-style economy where we have to barter with the rest of the world instead of, you know, just paying them in money. So, or doing direct currency exchanges, which also were impossible, by the way, with the Soviet ruble. So it's really just this lack of understanding of how the world works that brings us back to Mamdani, who seems to think that you can just keep spending and spending. So exactly how he thinks he can acclaim that this $12 billion deficit has been met is by saying that there are fee hikes or whatever that will surely cover that hole in his budget. He's really overestimating it, overestimating the wealth that he's going to generate with his new ideas for fee hikes on various things in New York City. So let's see. Gateway Pundit article here. According to city budget documents cited by the New York Post, officials are eyeing a laundry list of new fees, fines, and enforcement crackdowns to help plug fiscal gaps. These include dramatically increasing ambulance transportation costs, charging New Yorkers for EMS responses even if they refuse hospital transport, issuing more bus lane tickets, ramping up enforcement against the trade waste industry and wholesale markets, raising tree replacement fees, and aggressively auditing property owners tied to the popular Star Tax Relief Program. So, also, let me just look at that first one. Charging New Yorkers for EMS responses, even if they refuse hospital transport, and also dramatically increasing ambulance transportation fees. That kind of goes against how Ma'am Donnie announced this. Quote, "We didn't close the gap on the backs of working people." I think you just did. If you're going to raise the fees for an ambulance, oh, and he says call it democratic socialism. Raising the fees for ambulances is democratic socialism. Raising the fees for ambulances is not closing the gap on the backs of working people, according to the mayor, this democratic socialist mayor of New York City. I guess, really, with statements like that, you can't really trust that they'd lost $12 billion, or that he even knows what a money is, let alone how the monetary system works. Anyway, we got more Alan Nathan show after this break, or more Silver Joe show after this break, so stick with us.
An estimated 7.4 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's, and the cost of care is expected to top $400 billion this year. A new survey from the Alzheimer's Association finds that while Americans value brain health, many don't know how to protect it. Dr. Heather Snyder, Senior Vice President of Medical and Scientific Operations for the Alzheimer's Association, explains.
Nearly 9 in 10 Americans say brain health is as important as physical health, yet only 9% say they know a lot about how to maintain it. More than two-thirds worry about their brain health or about developing Alzheimer's. And while most recognize lifestyle habits matter, few connect them to reducing dementia risk.
The survey also shows Americans want trusted guidance and direction.
73% of Americans say they're interested in programs to support brain health, and most want guidance from their doctor. That tells us people are motivated. They just need practical, science-based information to act on.
Learn how to take action at alz.org/facts.
From new tech to the shift toward electric, the 2026 New York International Auto Show is putting the spotlight on what's new in the auto industry. From the show floor, here's Sean Tucker, managing editor at Kelley Blue Book.
At this year's show, Kia is giving drivers more choice. The 2027 Kia Seltos is larger, with more room inside and a more refined interior. It also adds a hybrid, making it the only vehicle in its class with three powertrain options. On top of that, you're getting advanced safety features and a more capable all-wheel drive system.
Kia is also showing the all-electric EV3, a compact SUV with up to 320 miles of range and fast charging capability.
The EV3 hits a sweet spot, right-sized and practical with strong range, quick charging, and the kind of technology and versatility that can make the shift to electric feel a lot more manageable for drivers.
To learn more about the Seltos and the EV3, visit Kia.com. That's Kia.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America Nationwide Network of Food Banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned, accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. with PVA staff working inside VA hospitals. No other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always happy to be here. We are joined for this segment by David Burke. He is, I gotta darn it, didn't load properly. He is a former Marine, former police officer, and congressional candidate for Florida's 22nd District, and half his bio was covered because Microsoft Word decided to elevate itself to the front with only half of it the document showing. But David Burke, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Joe. How are you?
Well, I'm doing well, thank you. So there's been redistricting talk in Florida, and how's it looking down there? Because this redistricting battle here in Virginia, it's looking pretty good so far, and it's driven the Democrats absolutely nuts. But how's it going in Florida?
You know, I think the Virginia redistricting battle looks like World War XI for them, right? They spent $60 million to try to get these lines drawn and passed, and on a shoddy ballot referendum that they say, oh, well, it's empowering the individuals, when they're just basically driving channels from northeastern Virginia all the way down into these outsizedly conservative districts. So, you know, shame on them, but it's funny. But down here, you know, we've had a explosion of population, an explosion of GDP into the state. And kind of what we've seen is largely political refugees, right? So people that are fleeing these blue states. And, you know, what the governor did, all above board, all within his rights as governor, you know, any legal challenges that are going to pop up, I think are going to be handled, pretty swiftly and succinctly. But, you know, there's been, if you look at some of the old districts where you had these large sweeping districts, now they're able to condense them because the population has grown so much, especially in Southeast Florida, Central Florida, and the Tampa area, Tampa St. Pete area. Now, my district spans from Wellington and Palm Beach County all the way through to, you know, the southern parts of Collier County, Everglades, agriculture, infrastructure around agriculture, and then parts of Broward County. So, I mean, I think the base and GOP voters, Republican voters, are going to be fired up to get out there, especially with the tit for tat that's been happening in other states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly fired us up here in Virginia. And, you know, I found it kind of funny. Their Democrats are talking about how they're going to have to rejig the Virginia State Supreme Court in order to get the proper redistricting that they wanted passed, and how the will of the people was ignored. But, like, when you looked at the turnout, Democrats weren't very enthusiastic about it. Compared to who turned out for the governor's race, 400,000 fewer Democrats came out versus, 10,000, 20,000 more Republicans.
Right. And you know, that just goes to tell you that sort of lowercase, let's call them like lowercase D Democrats, as their party becomes more and more radicalized and the loudest voices of the furthest left wing of the party become elevated, that, by the way, the Democrats don't push back against. I mean, look at the Senate race in Maine, where you've got, you know, the furthest left guy pushing out the what is it, the sitting governor, and out-fundraising her. But he is the most radical example. You've obviously got Mondami, and you've got sort of the other stalwarts of the far left. But that is what the party's becoming within the conservative movement and the GOP as a whole. We do a really good job at keeping the far right out of the political fray, and really focusing on, like, those kitchen table issues and those obviously, like, common sense culture war issues.
Right, and that's how Florida has managed to expand itself. That's why former Democrats, hopefully former Democrats anyway, from New York City found it a bit more attractive, because it wasn't so far right that it was alienating everyone, but it also wasn't particularly to the left either, to where it was just being the same disaster that they were fleeing. And as you said, that led to the need for this kind of redistricting because of the different population changes. But already that map is facing legal challenges. You have voting rights groups coming out and saying, oh, you can't change the maps and all of that. But who says you can't change them?
Well, you know, and you'd say, all right, well, mid-decade redistricting, they're saying it's an anomaly, it's new, we've never seen it. But also, have we ever seen a global pandemic before that literally shut down half the world, shut down half of the country, and forced millions of people to seek refuge in states like Tennessee, Texas, and Florida? We've never seen that. So I would say that mid-decade redistricting is kind of part and parcel to that that sort of aberration that we saw in 2020.
Right. If you can point to an anomaly in population growth, then surely that requires an anomalous response as far as the redistricting tradition. And also, on the other side of the coin, it seems that perhaps New York State and California should be kind of looking at redistricting and based on what their current populations would be, as opposed to what they think they have been.
And not for nothing, if you look in, you look at the sort of that New England area, and I hate to do, I hate to dive into the whataboutisms, but I mean, you look, there's zero Republican representation in New England, and in that entire alcove, there's de minimis representation in California, which is, you know, if you look at the trends, you got the Central Valley, you got parts of Southern California that are, you know, under Democratic representation, but really your sort of strongholds of Los Angeles, San Francisco, and somewhat San Diego, which is a little bit more conservative, called Cali conservative, still underrepresented by Republicans. So, you know, if you want to dive into the whataboutisms, that's a great case study to look at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't mind too much diving into them myself, just as long as we're honest about it. Like the way Democrats marketed redistricting in Virginia, they said it's about fairness and making sure you have an equal voice. Well, the guy in rural Virginia, they're saying, is basically capable of being represented by a Democrat in urbanized Fairfax County, which obviously that's not the case. What does the Democrat in Fairfax County, who's beholden to D.C. interests, know about the rural Virginia farmer?
Correct. 100%. And just look at the way that those Virginia maps, you've got these big trenches that run from northern Virginia down into the middle of the state. And to your point, you can't compare, you know, northern Virginia, Fairfax County, to, you know, central Virginia. It's just not, it's not right. I mean, look at my district that they just, like I said earlier, that they redrew. I mean, before you had three representatives, it was about three or four representatives that were parsing out one of the sort of the Everglades and the agricultural sector within the Everglades. So now you're going to have continuity of policy when I win, that I'm exclusively focused on conservation, preservation, and sort of the infrastructure around agriculture, and all of the communities that, you know, the populated communities that are in the district have some sort of exposure, whether by job or by geography, to agriculture in the Everglades. So, I mean, it really, like, that's just a real common sense district.
So in a way,
when you look at it from that perspective.
So in a way, then, Florida's redistricting actually ended up being in the shape of fairness and being more fair than not only the districts in Virginia, but also being in the tradition of what the districts Virginia had before it was redistricted.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, I'm not having to, you know, you got the right hand that doesn't know what the left hand's doing as it relates to matters of conservation and preservation down in the Everglades. There's actually a fire from, we've had a bit of a drier season down here. Typically, we're getting into our wet season in the summer, and now we've got, you know, pretty substantial fires in the Broward County line, Broward County border of the Everglades. And, you know, that historically, whose responsibility would that pushing the needle on the federal side? Now that's all going to be encompassed. Now you're going to have continuity of policy, and it's common sense across the board. And that's really what Governor DeSantis has been based on.
Mm-hmm. Well, David Burke, appreciate you being on the show. We have about 10 seconds left, so where can the listeners find out more about your campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me on Instagram at Burke, B-U-R-C-K, 4, F-O-R-F-L. And you can find me on my website, davidburke.com. That's David, common spelling, B-U-R-C-K.com.
All right. Well, thank you for being on. Listeners, something for you to check out during the break. We got more Silk Road Joe Show on the other side.
You have cancer. Those are the three words no one ever wants to hear. But according to new research from the Prevent Cancer Foundation, a different fear is keeping Americans from life-saving screenings. Foundation CEO Jody Hoyos shares more.
Our 2026 early detection survey reveals that concern about the cost of routine cancer screenings now rivals the fear of a cancer diagnosis. More than one in three adults cite costs as a top reason they're falling behind on routine screenings. When screenings are delayed, we miss the chance to prevent cancer or catch it early when it is most treatable and there are better health outcomes.
Many Americans are unaware there are laws in place that require insurance plans to cover most of these screenings.
Many routine screenings are fully covered by private insurance, Medicaid, and Medicare, meaning patients often pay nothing out of pocket. Early detection saves lives and may not cost what you think. Check what's covered and check your health.
To learn more, visit PreventCancer.org. That's PreventCancer.org.
Financial stress isn't just personal anymore. It's becoming a workplace crisis. New data shows 72% of Americans feel financial anxiety, and 40% have even missed work because of it. Jeff Howard, CEO of the Money Confidence Project.
Money Confidence Project is a nonprofit that leverages three entertainment-driven, high-engagement tools designed to help people build the skills, habits, and confidence they need to take the anxiety out of money. First, we have Million Stories, an award-winning video channel with over 250 episodes of creator-driven stories, breaking stigma and inspiring action. Then we have Groove, a personal finance app that reduces an individual's money anxiety and helps people build long-lasting financial habits. Finally, we have Venture Valley, an award-winning video game where players learn the dynamics of running a business through live tournament gameplay.
To learn more, go to moneyconfidenceproject.org. Financial stress isn't just personal anymore. It's becoming a workplace crisis. New data shows 72% of Americans feel financial anxiety, and 40% have even missed work because of it. Jeff Howard, CEO of the Money Confidence Project.
Money Confidence Project is a nonprofit that leverages three entertainment-driven, high-engagement tools designed to help people build the skills, habits, and confidence they need to take the anxiety out of money. First, we have Million Stories, an award-winning video channel with over 250 episodes of creator-driven stories, breaking stigma and inspiring action. Then we have Groove, a personal finance app that reduces an individual's money anxiety and helps people build long-lasting financial habits. Finally, we have Venture Valley, an award-winning video game where players learn the dynamics of running a business through live tournament gameplay.
To learn more, go to moneyconfidenceproject.org.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be in, always a blast to forget what time it is when trying to describe how small my yard is and how much smoke blew into the neighbor's yard from my fire pit. Anyway, well, burn pit is what I call it because it's too small to be a fire pit, but everything's too small. Anyway, so what happened earlier this week? I kind of wanted to talk about it on the Al Nathan show on Thursday, or on Wednesday when it was happening, but the show was a little too close to it, and only one news outlet had actually published anything. Whereas today, we've had more news outlets, yay. So we got Fox News here. Top four explosive moments from CIA whistleblower's testimony on alleged COVID-19 lab leak cover-up. And subheading, Democrats on the influential panel skip the hearing, drawing sharp criticism from GOP colleagues. They didn't want to even be there to demean the whistleblower and blast his reputation. Wanted nothing to do with it. Of course they wouldn't. Though, I'm curious, though. Normally, they would have been in on it. Normally, a Democrat would have been like, this is a great opportunity. I can get some footage of myself on my YouTube channel. I can blast this guy, destroy his credibility. I can save the party. Nobody wanted to take that? Wonder why. It's rather curious, isn't it, that they would be absent. Anyway, so let's see what this article says. Ad just popped up and pushed everything down, so there we go. Anyway, so let's see. It says here Rand Paul's oversight panel had subpoenaed Erdman is apparently the name of it's a 22-decade CIA veteran who is the whistleblower who is testifying about this because, quote, government secrecy cannot become government impunity, and he's testifying at great personal risk, and apparently, allegedly, there had been reporting about how Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard, the CIA had raided her office, but one of her spokespeople is denying that that happened after the whistleblower testimony. So, who knows? Oh, but that wasn't about that. It was about other stuff, the JFK assassination and other things. So maybe they did raid her office. They just didn't go after those documents. They went after anything that she might have had on this COVID stuff. So anyway, let's have a quote here. According to his testimony, CIA scientific analysts concluded multiple times between 2021 and 2023 that a lab leak was the most likely origin of COVID-19. Yet those conclusions never shaped the official narrative, never made the intelligence reports. Congress was never told. That's according to Rand Paul's statement. It was not until after the 2024 election that the outgoing Biden administration directed the CIA to issue an assessment, not because of new intelligence, but so officials could walk out of the door claiming there was nothing left to find. This is not analysis. This is a cleanup operation. So that's what Rand Paul came up with. But then the CIA whistleblower, Erdman, he alleged Fauci helped suppress COVID origins, prompting calls for criminal prosecution, which I think that the statute of limitations on lying to Congress just passed. And short, because Rand Paul was warning about it. I talked on the show, I think it was the 12th that these statute of limitations passed, because it was May 12th of whatever year that Fauci lied to Congress about participating in gain-of-function research. Well, sure enough, it's passed. The deadline for prosecuting him for lying to Congress has passed. No prosecutions, nothing held accountable. Why would they? The only time that Congress has ever held anyone accountable for violating its rules, lying before them, not showing up, whatever, was not Roger Stone. It was Steve Bannon. I think, yeah, Steve Bannon was the one that they tried to arrest for all that. But that's it. Never Democrats. Oh, wait, no, Eric Holder. He was held in contempt of Congress, whatever that means. he got a little fancy note that says, "We don't approve." That's all he got out of it. When you could really be arrested for this sort of stuff, but at least you and I would have been arrested for lying to Congress, but not these guys. Anyway, so following Erdman's testimony, several GOP lawmakers called for, damn these ads, for the former National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases Director Dr. Fauci to face criminal prosecution for allegedly seeking to suppress the origins of COVID. According to Erdman's own testimony, it was significantly influenced by Anthony Fauci injecting himself into the intelligence community. So, Fauci himself, Mr. Ego, was the one who was getting in on this. Here we go. The hearing came on Wednesday after a statute of limitations deadline for Fauci to face criminal charges regarding his lying to Congress passed earlier this week. I was right. Yay. Wow. So, that is the... We just let him go. Again. We didn't get any accountability out of it. And now we're finding out just how much this guy was involved in it. And also, the CIA apparently failed to comply with a COVID origins investigation, according to Erdman. They put up roadblocks to stifle his group's investigation into COVID origins while spying on and retaliating against whistleblowers. Quote, the CIA did not comply with lawful oversight during the DIG's investigation, Erdman told lawmakers. The CIA refused to provide information necessary to understand why analytic standards at the CIA were violated, unquote. And Erdman claimed the CIA illegally spied on DIG personnel and their communications with whistleblowers. Quote, these were Americans being spied upon illegally while executing duties directed by the president and under the authority of Director of National Intelligence. Wow. So Fauci shoves himself into this matter, creates all these lies, shoves himself into the intelligence community, creates all these lies, and then the CIA itself tries to block an investigation, spies on the people, lies about stuff, hides evidence, and we're supposed to just let it go, I guess, just like Congress did with Fauci. Just let it all go. We're not going to get any accountability on this one, folks. This is just another one of those, oh, we're shining daylight on it. Okay, great. We already knew it was a sticking pile. We could smell it. We wanted you to clean it up. We didn't want to put you to put a flashlight on it. I guess, you know, for one thing, crap stinks a lot worse when it's in direct sunlight and being heated up. Maybe that's what they're hoping, that someone else will get so upset about it that someone else will clean up the mess that the government made. Is that why these do-nothing Republicans in Congress are so addicted to these hearings that no action comes out of? Where's the Department of Justice been on all this stuff? Why wasn't Fauci prosecuted? Where is the any accountability whatsoever? That's what we voted Trump in for. That's what we expected. But that's not what we're getting. Now, granted, it could be that there are various deep state personnel, including in the Republican Party, but definitely in the Department of Justice and other such institutes for holding people accountable, who have no reason in this planet to hold anyone accountable. Why would they? The job of the government isn't to investigate itself. The job of the government is to say it's investigating itself and not actually find anything or release some findings a couple of years later after statute of limitations have run out or after public interest has run out. They're hoping to run out the clock. It's like a football game. At the tail end of it, you got 30 seconds left on the clock. You just take a knee, you let the clock run out instead of doing your plays because you know that you've won the game. And that's what our government is doing to us. They know, the deep state knows it's won the game. It's just got to wait out all this Trump stuff. Then you're going to have the rhinos back in power, or you're going to have Democrats back in power, and no accountability has to happen. Nothing has to change. They just got to hold fast. It's kind of funny. It's like, on the one hand, we can't, our Western minds, or at least the minds the government seeks, can't seem to understand Islam and how it takes such a long world view, how they're not looking for something right now, how they're looking to, how they can trace their origins back hundreds of years, how they're looking at hundreds of years in the future with their planning. And we look at that and can't understand it. We're thinking, well, they need jobs right now. They don't need to, they don't want to live in poverty for until their goals are achieved or whatever. They want to have Western amenities right now. Yet here we are with the government that also takes such a long view. We can wait this out. We don't have to go through all this right now. We don't need anything to happen right now. It's like, I guess that's another reason why they say Islam is political ideology masquerading as a religion, because it takes the same long view that a deep state bureaucracy takes on matters. It's kind of funny. So a gulf of understanding between two people that have the same viewpoint on the planet. But it is for the rest of us, though, who want accountability and know it's not going to happen, it's rather frustrating just seeing the government getting away with stuff that we know we'd be prosecuted for. I mean, if I inserted myself into the intelligence community, created a bunch of lies, I'd be prosecuted. In fact, Democrats are talking about doing that to Trump administration officials. Like, they're accusing Trump administration officials of inserting themselves where they don't belong, creating policies where they shouldn't, all that stuff. And then, on the one hand, they're doing that. On the other hand, they're boycotting this meeting with finding out that, well, guess what? Their hero, Dr. Fauci, did the same darn thing. And you got this whistleblower right here exposing all this stuff. Heck, why don't you ask the whistleblower about stuff that the Trump administration screwed up? No one showed up. Democrats did not show up. So they are complicit in their silence, I guess. But also, it's weird that they were silent about it. It's weird they didn't show up to do a counterpoint. Who told them to stay out of it? Because as I said, you know that a Democrat would be just champing at the bit to get inside that meeting and tear that witness apart. Who told them not to? Who told them not to ask this guy questions? Who told them to stay away, hoping that perhaps there would be no coverage of this, especially if a Democrat didn't come out and say something stupid? Because it's almost like they're figuring, well, we can shield half the country from seeing that this meeting even took place by having the Democrats withdraw from it. Therefore, no one following the Democrats would know that it happened or would look into it any further. Maybe that's the goal. More Silk or Joshua after this break.
Spring is here, and for many, that means lawns, gardens, and even backyard chickens. Tractor Supply Ambassador Marty Scold Jordan joins us with tips to get started on transforming your outdoor spaces into productive, rewarding environments.
We're seeing strong interest from customers getting their homes, land, animals ready for this spring season. Whether it's raising chicks for fresh eggs, putting in a garden, or wanting the perfect lawn, our customers are leaning into a more hands-on, self-reliant lifestyle. At Tractor Supply, we know life out here is about caring for what matters. Your animals, your land, your home, and the pride that comes with doing it yourself. Whether you have a small yard or a multi-acre farm, our team members are there for you with practical advice, the right tools and supplies, and a vast mower selection featuring the best brands.
For more information, go to tractorsupply.com/spring or head to your local Tractor Supply store and get everything you need for a great spring.
Building a brand is hard work, really hard work. Learning how to shape a message, scale with intention, and build a reputation can take time. A new book from a seasoned PR professional can help. In The Entrepreneur Advantage, Turning Chaos into Clarity, author Samantha Flynn draws from her nearly two decades of experience in public relations and uses the realities of entrepreneurship to provide strategies, systems, and mindset shifts that help companies thrive.
The core principles of PR aren't just marketing tools. They're entrepreneurial lifelines. In The Entrepreneur Advantage, I help professionals by sharing real examples, hard-learned lessons, and the behind-the-scenes moments that grow a brand. This book equips readers with perspective, structure, and insight to strengthen their voice, grow their business, and lead with clarity in an increasingly noisy world.
The Entrepreneur Advantage, Turning Chaos into Clarity, is now available. Learn more at SamanthaFlynn.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silver Joe Show. My co-host Joe with you all today. Always a blast to be here. And we are now joined this final segment of the hour by Dr. Steve Bonta. He is a publisher of the New American Magazine and a longtime contributor for them, as well as writing on economics, foreign affairs, and American politics, among other subjects. Dr. Bonta, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. So we had this CIA whistleblower comes out, testifies on how the deep state was influenced, the origins investigation into COVID, the CIA tried to block it, Dr. Fauci inserted himself into the cover-up, and not a single Democrat showed up for the hearing, not even to try and destroy the witness. What's your takeaway from all this?
I saw that. Well, in this case, methinks the men protest too little. I think the COVID cover-up has become so toxic that the Democrats are starting to belatedly realize that if they continue to show up screaming and berating everything the Republicans say and so forth on these hearings, that it's just going to look bad for them. So I think they've decided to adopt a strategically low profile in the run-up to the fall elections on this and on other, you know, combustible issues.
Mm. Yeah, Politico just reported that they've dropped all other tactics after their redistricting battles flopped, and they've gone back to blaming Trump as the trying to rally their voters out to vote. And I guess with the COVID investigation here, if they inserted themselves into it, well, you can't really blame Trump at that point. He had nothing to do with it, unless they want to try and spin it somehow to make it seem like in his first term, Trump was the ultimate origin of the attempt to cover it up.
Well, I don't know that they've ever backed away from the rhetorical posture of a generation ago to the effect that it's not just one person, it's a vast right-wing conspiracy that's arrayed against them. I believe those were Hillary Clinton's words originally. And so obviously it's not just Trump, but all of his epigones and his retinue and his sinister followers and apparatchiks who are all, you know, trying to subvert the righteous Democrat cause at every turn. And obviously, you know, COVID, unfortunately, has become so toxic that it's really impossible, you know, unlike other issues that are their stock in trade, like, you know, crying racism at every turn and things like that. It's become just so blatant that COVID was a cover-up, that it did, you know, was partly, you know, aided and abetted by Fauci and American research monies, flowed directly into Chinese coffers, and, you know, funded the research at Wuhan. And obviously, you know, I mean, the very first fallback years ago, for those of us who remember, was that any talk that COVID, you know, originated in the lab at Wuhan was conspiracy theory. And I wondered then often why it was that, you know, the establishment interests in Washington were so quick to coalesce around that narrative and close ranks and insist that whatever else one may say, it didn't originate in Wuhan. Well, it's because they knew all along, I suspect, or some of them did, that Fauci was involved, that American research dollars were involved, and that the thing would be really toxic if the American people ever found out about this. You know, and obviously we have now. And so, yeah, I don't know if there's much more to say at this point. I would predict that Fauci is going to remain essentially untouchable. There are certain people in D.C. that clearly are, and, you know, the Clintons are among them, and Fauci is another. I don't think it doesn't matter. You know, they could produce evidence that the guy was, you know, supervising, the murder of infants and the extraction of their blood for research purposes, and he still wouldn't be indicted. I exaggerate, of course, but I'm saying that, you know, I think that the guy is for whatever reasons has made the right friends and is, you know, tapped into the right networks and will skate on this.
Yeah, well, we just saw him skate by his charge for lying to Congress. The statute of limitations ran out on that earlier this week. Rand Paul warned about it last week, and sure enough, the day came to pass, and nothing happened. Although that seems to be par for the course when it comes to lying to Congress. They let the statute of limitations slide. I remember when the people who lied about spying on the NSA spying on Americans. I remember those deadlines coming past with nothing happening. I remember Hillary Clinton lying about classified information on her email servers to Congress and the deadline for that passing with nothing happening. So it just seems like you can almost lie to Congress without any consequence.
If you're a well-connected Democrat or, you know, somebody part of the D.C. establishment, yes. If you lie to or accused of lying to or display contempt of Congress in any degree, and you're a MAGA or you're something else, you know, then yeah, you'll do jail time or suffer heavy fines and all the rest of this, as a number of Trump's people have found out over the years. So there's a double standard on that, as with so many other things.
Yeah, it doesn't really do much faith for the American people and their government, does it? Where you see people skating by for lying to Congress, you see Fauci skating by for everything, and you hear the CIA whistleblower come out and say, well, look at how much he's inserted himself into this investigation, look at the CIA disrupting the investigation. Well, who's going to get fired over that? Are any CIA operatives going to be held accountable? Is there going to be any accountability of any kind from anybody?
No, and I mean, you know, I mean, I hate to sound cynical, but Americans have reached, I think, an appropriate level of cynicism, which we did not have in the good old days of Leave It to Beaver and the picket fence culture of the 1950s and 1960s that are but a dim memory now. People, the default setting for most Americans, at least most decent Americans, was that, you know, shenanigans happen in Washington from time to time, but basically the government is virtuous and has our best interests in mind. And, you know, people from other parts of the world, you know, people living in the Soviet Union or even, you know, Western Europe, you know, generally have traditionally been a lot more cynical about this sort of thing and have always just assumed that the government is their foe, and that there's a, you know, an aristocratic class of elites that are whose interests are fundamentally hostile to those of the common man. Every European, for example, understands this. But Americans, I think, have come around to that point of view in the last generation or so. And it's kind of sad in a way, because our country was founded on some pretty high-minded ideals, and they seem to have gone by the wayside. You know, we still have a constitution, we still have a republic of law that occasionally functions as such, but the reality of these, you know, I hate to use the word, but conspiratorial elites who are just working at variance with the interests of the American people to serve their own selfish agendas is just impossible to deny at this point.
Well, Dr. Bonta, I appreciate you leaving us with that bit of optimism at the tail end of the Silk or Joe show here. We got about 10 seconds left, so where can listeners find out more about the New American?
New American, thenewamerican.com. You can subscribe to it online or digitally. It's a monthly magazine. We call ourselves the Red Pill Publication of Record.
All right. Well, Dr. Bonta, appreciate you being on, and listeners, appreciate you all tuning in as well. You can check that out, but also don't forget our websites, mainstreetradionetwork.com, and for the Alan Nathan Show, alannathan.com, in case you want to check that out, just because I happen to host that a bunch of times each week. And be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.